Welcome to the Federal Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federal Society's Litigation Practice Group, was recorded on Friday, February 17, 2017, during a live telephone conference call held exclusively for Federal Society members.
Welcome to the Federalist Society's telephone conference call. This afternoon, we will hear a litigation update on the case American Bankers Association and Washington Federal versus United States. My name is Laura Flint. I'm the Deputy Director of Practice Groups at the Federalist Society. As always, please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the experts on today's call. Today we are happy to have with us Stephen J. Obermeyer and Brett A. Shumate, who are both partners at Wiley Ryan LLP. Wiley Ryan represents the plaintiffs in this case. I will turn it over to Brett Shumate to get us started. After opening remarks, we will go to audience question and answer. Thank you both for speaking with us. Brett, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Laura. We are very pleased to see everybody today talking about the ABA versus the United States case in the Court of Federal Claims. Steve and I are going to talk a little bit about an overview of the case. I'll talk a little bit about the Federal Reserve and provide an overview of that. Steve's going to talk a little bit about the FAST Act that Congress passed in 2015. Then I'll give a brief overview of the lawsuit and the contract claim that's alleged in the lawsuit. And Steve's going to finish up talking about the Fifth Amendment takings claim and give a brief litigation update. So just by way of an overview, what this case is about is it's an important case of national significance, but ultimately we think it's a pretty straightforward case involving the application of existing precedent. In what's called the 2015 FAST Act, it's a highway bill, Congress, with President Obama's approval, unilaterally and without any hearings or debate, reduced the 6% dividend rate that the government had agreed to pay the banks that had paid millions of dollars to purchase stock in the 12 regional Federal Reserve banks. Now, that 6% dividend rate had been in place for over 100 years since the Federal Reserve had been founded in 1913. What Congress did in the FAST Act was divert the savings from the dividend payments to the highway bill to pay for unrelated infrastructure spending that really has no relation to the Federal Reserve or the banking system. And our complaint for the ABA and Washington Federal alleges that that decision was a breach of express contracts with the banks that had purchased stock in the regional Federal Reserve banks. It's also a breach of the government's implied duty of good faith and fair dealing. It also constitutes a taking in violation of the Fifth Amendment. And what I think the complaint really drives at is that this action by the government here to change the dividend rate sets a dangerous precedent, because what Congress did was target a specific segment of the business community, in fact, 1% of all banks, to fund unrelated expenditures that benefit the entire country. And our concern is that if Congress can do this with impunity, then Congress will continue to come back to the banks or some other segment of the business community to fund, you know, unrelated infrastructure projects and other projects, and effectively use the banks as piggy banks to fund pet projects. So that's an overview, and I'd like to turn and talk a little bit about the Federal Reserve System and how it's been set up, because I think that's essential to understanding the FAST Act and the lawsuit. So, as many of you probably know, the Federal Reserve System was set up in 1913 with the Federal Reserve Act. And prior to that time, the banking system was really in a crisis because you had runs on the bank, those sorts of things. And Congress wanted to decided that we don't want an autocratic central bank like in Europe. We wanted more of a decentralized system. So what Congress did in the Federal Reserve Act is established two components of the system. You've got the Board of Governors in Washington, D.C., that most people are familiar with. You've got the Fed chairman setting interest rates, that sort of thing. But you've also got 12 regional Federal Reserve banks that sit around the country, New York, San Francisco, St. Louis. And these reserve banks are really the operating arms of the Federal Reserve System. They're the bankers for the Treasury. They perform all sorts of various functions for the government. And what Congress had to decide was, how are we going to fund the regional banks? And the way they decided to do it was, they decided they wanted to incentivize commercial banks to join the Federal Reserve System because They wanted the commercial banks to be subject to regulation by the Federal Reserve and stabilize the banking system, avoided the crises that had happened in the 19th century. And so as a way to incentivize the banks to join the Federal Reserve System, Congress decided that the reserve banks could issue stock. And they would issue stock, and the commercial banks would buy that stock, and in exchange, the government would pay a 6% dividend on that stock. There are a lot of strings attached to the stock that the reserve banks issue. It is not transferable. It doesn't increase in value. It has a set value of $100. And the reserve banks, the commercial banks, when they purchase that stock, they can't trade it, but they get the 6% dividend. And that had been kind of the essence of the deal for 100 years. Even though Congress set the system up that way and allowed the reserve banks to pay the 6% dividend, even today, only about a third of the nation's about 6,000 banks are members of the Federal Reserve System. So in many ways, the Federal Reserve Act has been a success story in the sense that it has stabilized the banking system, incentivized a sufficient level of participation by the commercial banks that the Federal Reserve has sufficient regulatory power to regulate the nation's banks, stabilize the banking system, and that's the way the system had worked for about 100 years. Anything I omitted, Steve, about the history of the reserve system?
I don't think so, Brett, and thank you, everyone, again, for being with us today. As Brett mentioned, I'm going to talk a little bit about the FAST Act, which really this case is about, and the history that Brett provided kind of gives some context to why what the FAST Act did was so egregious in many respects. So the FAST Act is the Fixing America's Surface Transportation Act, and it was signed by President Obama on December 4th, 2015. And the legislation is designed to fund surface transportation infrastructure planning and investment. And it authorized $305 billion over fiscal years 2016 to 2020 for basically highway and highway-related projects, highway and motor vehicle safety, public transportation, motor carrier safety, hazardous material safety, et cetera, notably absent anything related to the banking system or commercial banks. So to pay for these programs, Congress decided basically to raid the banks by making two significant changes to what's called the Federal Reserve Surplus Fund. And what that is that basically is a fund that includes the funds that are raised by the regional Federal Reserve banks that they can kind of keep in the Federal Reserve System. And then funds exceeding the Federal Reserve Surplus Fund maximums are then swept into the United States Treasury. So the FAST Act, like I said, did two things to that fund. First, the FAST Act reduced the size of the Federal Reserve Surplus Fund to $10 billion, requiring the reserve to divert a greater percentage of the annual surplus, so that is funds exceeding $10 billion, to the Treasury. The second thing the FAST Act did was it increased the funds flowing into the surplus funds, and thus the funds being diverted to the Treasury, by substantially reducing the guaranteed 6% annual dividend to member banks with more than $10 billion in assets to a floating rate that equals the 10-year Treasury rate or 6%, whichever is higher. That's kind of a mouthful, but there's basically two important points for context here about what this did. First is the rate cut was significant. So just as an example, when the Act was passed, the 10-year Treasury rate was 2.304%. So banks with over $10 billion in assets are getting their dividends reduced from 6% to 2.304%. When the first semi-annual dividend payment was due in 2016 following the Act's passage, the rate was as low as 1.702%. And for the second payment in 2016, it was 2.485%. So it's a substantial slashing of the what had been the guaranteed 6% rate. The other kind of important point is the legislation, and Brett alluded to this, but the legislation singled out the biggest banks for their reduced dividend rate. And there are 72 member banks with at least $10 billion in assets who are affected by this, or which are affected by this. And And I think, as Brad mentioned, that only constitutes 1% of the total banks in the country. The remaining smaller member banks continue to receive the 6% dividend. So obviously there was some understanding that 6% dividend was important on those assets. The CBO has determined that this change would yield about $6.9 billion in new revenue for the government between fiscal years 2016 and 2025. So that's obviously it's a big number. And in 2016 alone, the new act has cost the affected member banks approximately $1.1 billion. And that will continue to increase substantially every 6 months until this is fixed. Some general points about the legislation. That's a little bit about the mechanics, some kind of a little more context for the legislation. First, it's unprecedented, the FAST Act, in that it was the first time that the Federal Reserve funds were ever used to fund legislation completely unrelated to the banking system. And really, even the Fed itself expressed concern about this. Janet Yellen stated in testimony, and forgive me, I don't have the exact date of this, but she stated, quote, that she was, quote, concerned that reducing dividends could have unintended consequences for banks' willingness to be part of the Federal Reserve System. And just as a general matter, I mean, you know, the Fed is an important aspect of the Fed, obviously, is that it is independent from politics. By using the Fed now, as Brett said, as a piggy bank, it's jeopardizing the independence of the Fed and roping it into these political disputes over budget. And second, the bill was really kind of passed in secrecy. It might be a bit of a strong word, but there were no hearings or debate, and it was just basically jammed through. So the deal itself, aside from the results, which are problematic, the way it was done was problematic. And I should say the bill was not without its critics. One representative noted that Congress, quote, should not be robbing the banks to pay for our roads and bridges. Another member of Congress believed, quote, it was a mistake to tap federal resources that have nothing to do with transportation to cover the bill's cost. Under this bill, we are funding highways in part by taking money from banks and the Federal Reserve. And then another representative warned that the Federal Reserve Bank surplus fund, quote, is made up of the earnings that the Federal Reserve has retained from investing member banks' money, and cautioned that Congress should not be relying on, quote, completely unrelated sectors of the economy to fund the nation's transportation improvements. So going back to what, you know, Brett said at the beginning, this kind of where does something like this stop if you can start reaching into the pockets of maybe some of the you know, wealthier segments of the economy to fund pet projects or other segments of the economy. Stuff like this is allowed to go on. The possibilities seem limitless. Brett, did I miss anything on the FAST Act that went in?
No, I don't think so. I think that's a good summary of where we were. The FAST Act became effective in 2016, January 1st. Throughout that year, the Reserve Banks made two payments below the 6% dividend rate. We filed a complaint last week for two clients, the American Bankers Association and Washington Federal Bank in Seattle, Washington. And I'll just give a little bit of an overview of a couple of the claims that are made in the complaint. The first claim is breach of an express contract. The second claim is violation of the implied duty of good faith and fair dealing. And the third claim is a takings claim. Let me explain a little bit about the breach of contract claim. The essence of that claim is that there is a contract between the commercial banks and the reserve banks. And the way that there's a contract is, for example, Washington Federal, one of the plaintiffs in the case, applied to join the Federal Reserve System by submitting an application to the Reserve Bank in San Francisco. And agreed to put up $24 million to buy stock in that Reserve Bank. And in exchange, the Reserve Bank agreed to pay a 6% dividend. And we attached the contract to the complaint that shows the essential terms of the contract. And for 2 years, the government admitted, granted the application, and charged Washington Federal for the stock, issued the shares, and agreed to pay the 6% dividend. And for 2 years, the Reserve Bank in San Francisco paid that dividend of 6%, and so did the other reserve banks throughout the country to all the banks that had joined the Federal Reserve System. And the complaint alleges that in 2015, when Congress changed the law to reduce the dividend rate, that the government then breached those contracts because there was a contractual obligation to pay a 6% dividend. In essence, Washington Federal and all other banks performed their obligations under the contracts by paying trillions of dollars, in fact, to purchase this stock that cannot be traded, sold, or put up as collateral. And the government just hasn't upheld its end of the bargain and unilaterally changed the deal by reducing the dividend rate to effectively 2% in 2016. The other contract-related claim is, like I said, breach of the implied duty of good faith and fair dealing. This really comes from a seminal Supreme Court case called Winstar. And the essence of Winstar is that the Supreme Court said the government can't use its sovereign power to eviscerate somebody's reasonable expectations in a contract with the government. And that's essentially what exactly what Congress did in the FAST Act. It specifically targeted a small segment of the business community, targeted their contract right to a 6% dividend, and eviscerated that right, and took it for unrelated purposes and compelled the reserve banks to transfer that money into the Treasury to pay for the highway bill. So that's the essence of the contract claims in the complaint. And the third claim is a taking claim arising under the Fifth Amendment, and I'll let Steve talk a little bit about that.
Thanks, Brett. And just I'll just add maybe to the extent, I don't know if I'm repeating a little bit of what Brett said, but you know, there's actually an application document. There is then an acceptance document from the bank, at least with respect to Washington Fed. These are attached to our complaint. And then Washington Fed received a stock certificate. So when we say it's an express contract, I mean the contract documents are there, and they're there in our complaint, and they I think are clear about promising a 6% dividend. So I think that's an important point to make on the contract claim. With respect to the takings claim, the complaint basically outlines two theories of takings. It's a taking both of the bank's contractual and statutory rights to receive a 6% dividend on the Federal Reserve Bank stock, and then also a taking of the bank's capital investments in the Federal Reserve Bank stock. And you know, there are three prongs to a regulatory taking, and you know, the complaint addresses these, but basically there's a significant adverse impact on the bank's contract rights and or capital investments. The banks had a reasonable investment-backed expectation in receiving the market rate of return on the capital they invested in the system, and that market rate of return was 6% annual dividend. And then the character of the governmental action is that it's a taking, which is bolstered by the fact that the funds are being used to fund something, highways, that bear no relation to the commercial banking system. So, you know, it really does fall into the category of a taking as well. And then, as Brett said, I was just going to give a brief update of the case. There's not a ton to update at this point. The complaint was filed on February 9th. The government's response is due April 10th, I believe. That's 60 days for the government, as many of you probably know. I think we expect the case to move quickly. We're hopeful that it does. And that is basically the status of the case at this point. Brett, is there anything else that you want to add?
No, nothing else. Laura, I think we'll turn it back to you for any questions.
Great. Let's go to audience questions. In a moment, you'll hear a prompt indicating that the floor mode has been turned on. After that, to request the floor, enter star, then the pound key. When we get to your request, you will hear a prompt, and then you may ask your question. We will answer questions in the order in which they are received. Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. And while we wait for that first audience question, I'll ask a question of my own. What was the impact from the FAST Act on the banks? Like, what sort of damages are we looking at?
Sure. Laura, thanks. Great question. So in the complaint, we identify 72 banks that were affected by the FAST Act's reduction of the dividend. So what we were able to do was calculate, okay, what were these banks, what should they have been paid at the 6% rate, and what were they actually paid at roughly a 2% rate in 2016. And we were able to come up with damages for all the affected banks of about $1.1 billion. And that's money that was diverted to the Treasury to pay for the highway bill. And this is money that the government had agreed to pay to the commercial banks that had joined the system. And just to put it in context, these banks, these 72 banks that we identified, put up close to $28 trillion into the Federal Reserve System to buy their stock. And the government had made a deal with these banks that if you give us that money, which we're going to put toward governmental purposes, we're going to pay you a fair market return of 6%. And the government still has that $28 trillion, and they're no longer paying a fair market return on that investment in the Federal Reserve Bank stock. So to answer your question, it's about $1.1 billion.
Just a reminder, our floor mode is open. So to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. Our lines are wide open. I guess I'll ask another question while we wait for our audience. Why did you file the complaint as a class action?
This is Steve. We filed the complaint as a class action because this is kind of a quintessential class claim. There are 72 we've mentioned that number a couple times, banks in the same position. There are the same common questions of law and fact with respect to these contracts. The damages are calculated the same. The numerosity requirement of class is I think pretty easily met with 72 total. So basically, a class is, we believe, the most efficient and the both from a party standpoint and from the court standpoint, frankly, to adjudicate what amounts to a single question of law that affects everybody.
Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. I'll take this time. Oh, actually, we have our first question, so I'll go to that audience member.
Hi, good afternoon.
Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. So based on the takings clause claim, what do you expect would be the damages, or what kind of award would you be expecting out of this?
I think basically the same. I think, our position is 6% is the just rate of return. So the damages should be the 6% that was guaranteed in the contract. We think that's the market and the just compensation, market rate and the just compensation.
So now are you just looking to have the compensation readjusted to where it was, or are you looking for any kind of compensatory damages or anything like that?
Yeah, it's just a damages claim. We're in the Court of Federal Claims where we can only seek money damages, and that's the appropriate relief for these plaintiffs who were entitled to a certain amount. They didn't get it. We're not seeking to enjoin the government and compel them to pay the correct amount in the future. We're only seeking damages for past harm at this point.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your question.
Piggybacking off that question, why did you file in the Court of Federal Claims?
So we filed in the Court of Federal Claims because that court is the only court that has damages to award money damages against the government. So since our claims here are directed toward the government, you can only sue the government for damages in that court. So, we looked at federal district court as an option, but the types of claims and harm that have been suffered by the banks, really the only type of relief that we believe is appropriate can be obtained in the Court of Federal Claims. So that's why we're there. The Court of Federal Claims sits in Washington, D.C. Appeals from the Court of Federal Claims go to the Federal Circuit, also in Washington, D.C. So.
Great. Our floor is open. So again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone. In the meantime, I'll make a couple announcements. Our next Teleform conference call is scheduled for Tuesday, February 21st at 3 p.m. That call will recount the oral argument in McLean v. EEOC, a case being argued in front of the Supreme Court on Tuesday. The call will feature Karen Harned, who is the Executive Director at the National Federation of Independent Business. A reminder to keep an eye out for emails announcing upcoming Teleforum calls, and you can also consult the full schedule of our upcoming Teleforum conference calls on the Federalist Society's website. There are also available podcasts of previously recorded Teleforum calls you may have missed. I'll make a final call for questions. Please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. Oh, here we have one. Go ahead, caller.
Good afternoon. I had a couple of questions. First of all, has any of the money in this from the FAST Act actually gone to highways? And if not, how will that impact what President Trump's idea of repairing the infrastructure that he wants to do over the next years of his administration?
So I don't think we have an answer to the question of if any of these savings, the $1.1 billion in savings, have already gone to pay for highway projects. What we know is that the Federal Reserve Banks transferred approximately $92 billion to the Treasury in February of this year. And the $1.1 billion in savings from the reduced dividend payments were part of that. So I think it's too early to tell whether that money is already spent.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if we could know exactly where it went after that, but yeah.
And in terms of the Trump administration, I think that's there's now additional money in the Treasury that is due to the banks, but that I guess potentially could be used for infrastructure projects. But I think there would be a need to be a new funding law passed to pay for any new projects.
Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. Not seeing, oh, here's one. Go ahead, caller.
Good afternoon. I'm not so familiar with the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. But is it your position that this could never be changed, the 6% rate, or at some point in the future, is there a procedure that Congress could do it in a way that you believe would be legal?
I think our view is what Congress did here is a breach of contract for the banks that are already in the system. And now if Congress wanted to change the law prospectively and only affect like new banks that wanted to join the system, potentially that may be a way that Congress can do it. But what Congress can't do is for the banks that are already in the system that have already bought their stock and have a contract with the government, the Congress can't unilaterally change the law and breach those contracts and take the bank's money. I think it's an interesting question whether if Congress had changed the law in a way to make it only prospectively, a prospective change to the dividend rate. I think that's an interesting question. But I think, like Steve mentioned earlier, the Federal Reserve itself had reservations about this law and the potential unintended consequences that I think the chair of the Federal Reserve was alluding to is that the dividend was intended to be an incentive for the banks to join the Federal Reserve system. And I think the Fed has a legitimate fear that by reducing that dividend rate, banks may leave the system and that new banks may not join the system. And that's something that the government wants to encourage. By having them within the system, they're subject to additional regulatory restrictions and things like that. So great question. I think it's a tough one. But one thing is clear that Congress cannot do it retroactively.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, just a reminder, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. Our lines are wide open.
Not seeing any questions, would you guys like to make some final closing remarks?
First of all, I just want to thank everybody for the great questions and for your interest in the case. I'm sure we'll have more updates as the litigation continues, and we'll try to continue to do these teleforums. So stay tuned. There's going to be a lot of action in this case and a lot of interesting issues in the case. Steve?
Yeah, I'll just reiterate what Brett said. Thank you for being here. We're excited about this case. As Brett said at the beginning, it really is a case of national importance. It really can affect, could potentially affect a lot of other industries. This is something that needs to be corrected, and we're hopeful that this lawsuit will do that. So we're looking forward to taking it forward.
On behalf of the Federalist Society, I want to thank our experts for the benefit of their valuable time and expertise today. We welcome listener feedback by email at info@fedsoc.org. Thank you all for joining us. We are adjourned.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at fedsoc.org/multimedia.